Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal profession. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. And so for our Love and Legal Tech feature, we have with us today Karen Dunn Skinner, who's the co-founder and CEO at Gimbal. Karen, welcome to the Geek in Review.
Glad to be here.
And we have with her Karen's partner in crime, David Skinner, who is the co-founder and president of Gimbal. So, David, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
You even had a chime to introduce David.
I was just thinking.
So this is what happens when you work together.
Yeah, your first son. Sorry.
It's in well. That is one of our children, and they have an override. And so we always have to warn them. This is something to remember when you work with your spouse. You have to warn them not to contact you during podcasts or anything.
Oh, does that actually work?
I was going to say.
No, but I'm going to try.
That does not work for me.
He's a little boy. He's 26, so he should get it.
Hey, hope springs eternal.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a few more years from that, but.
All right. I just said
maybe someday. I can hope.
Okay. And that's
so,
just
time so. Karen and David, tell us a little bit about what you do at Gimbal and maybe kind of what you did before that kind of got you each to Gimbal.
Ah, okay. So it's funny because when we were invited to come on and talk about Love and Legal Tech, my first question was, we don't really do legal tech specifically, but we use legal tech all the time and talk to our clients about it all the time.
We use the legal tech very loosely.
Yeah, we're very loose on this.
What we do is we help lawyers build practices that they love that also gives them time to build lives that they love. We help people to be more productive, be more profitable without working as hard. And we really started the business because we had practiced law, both of us, for over 20 years in very large law firms. And I ended up in a solo practice and David in-house and, you know, did a PhD partway through that. So there's a lot. We've been around. We've done different things in the legal profession for a long time. And one of the things that we found was there had to be a better way to do it because honestly, we don't very often meet unhappy ex-lawyers. And that tells you a lot about the profession. And so we thought there has to be a better way to do it. So we looked around, we looked at different ways of looking at the practice, looking at the delivery of legal services. And we hit on eventually in like 2011, 2012, on this idea of could we adapt Lean and Lean Six Sigma to the practice of law? And that's kind of what brought us in. And we looked at what Seyfarth was doing. We looked at what a Canadian law firm, BLG, was doing. And we were friends with one of the partners at BLG who said, this is really working for us. So we started really thinking about how we could adapt that to the practice of law. And that's really what got us to start Gimbal. We did some training. I got a black belt in Lean Six Sigma. And over the years, we've just been adapting those strategies and others, but those approaches to streamlining the way that lawyers practice with a real focus on getting people to think about their work differently and think about their value differently so that they also value their lives. You know, we get sucked in law a lot of times and hard to have the life that you want.
David, anything to add to that?
Not in particular. No, at its core, our focus is on helping people be as great at the business of law as they are at the practice of law. Most lawyers that you come across are really good at what they do, and they genuinely enjoy what they do. But the common refrain is almost always just way too busy to get the mission critical things that I need to get done in a regular day. So I sacrifice my evenings with my family. I sacrifice holiday weekends away. I sacrifice the kids' ballet and or soccer events. And that's just not the way it has to be. It really doesn't. And our focus is on helping people realize that through a clear focus and a clear plan towards efficiency and effectiveness, they can be more productive, they can be more profitable. And the end result of that is they end up with a huge amount more time to focus on the things that really matter. Whether, Greg, that happens to be getting more of the mission-critical legal work done, or getting out of Dodge and spending time business developing or spending time with your community, your church, whatever it happens to be, family. And that's the sort of lack of balance that or integration that people tend to have in the practice. It's sort of all in, nothing left over. And I think that's really unfortunate. So our mission really is to help people be as great at the business of law as they are at the practice of law and to have the time and freedom to enjoy their success doing other things that they love.
So Karen, I wanted to ask you about the black belt in Six Sigma. How many boards do you have to break to earn?
I don't break boards. I make a lot of boards. I make a lot of Kanban boards.
How many Post-it notes do you have to put on that board?
Oh my God! So we have Post-it notes everywhere, and we were just on site with a client in Atlanta.
Oh, there they are.
Yeah, we were on site with a client in Atlanta all last week, doing a huge process improvement project with their legal team and their commercial team and some sales folks and finance folks, really looking at their whole customer contracting process. And we used so many Post-it notes. And one guy walked into the room and he's like, I think the consulting business has maintained 3M and the Post-it business entirely for the last decade. And then he walked out again.
and our response to that was, we wish he'd invested in 3M a long time ago because we could retire by now.
Right.
We use a lot of Post-it notes. Someone else looked at the wall and said, oh, this is totally overwhelming. There's too many colors. I'm leaving.
So, yeah, well, we like Post-it notes.
I'm keeping notes right now on a Post-it note.
Well done. So you guys have done a really good job of pulling the company together. Do you mind? Let's back up a little bit more. How did the two of you meet? And then did you guys work together before? Or is this kind of the first time that you've done a joint operation?
We've got a long story.
So the long story short is we met in law school. I was in my third year and Karen was an L1, a freshman in law school.
And you gave away the last hot dog at the barbecue?
I did. I gave it to
Seems to
Stephen
be a sticking
Perry.
Point still.
It is a little bit. I gave the last hot dog away to one of our professors, Stephen Perry.
Yeah.
And and Karen sort of didn't forgive me for that. But the interesting thing is that Karen's parents lived about a couple of miles downriver from very, very close family friends of my family's. For them, it's a cottage. For Karen's family, it's their principal residence. And they knew that Karen was coming to Montreal, and they'd been asked to sort of look out for her because she might need a room. When she first got to Montreal, finding an apartment was a bit of a challenge. And the goofy thing is that years prior, when I was my last year of high school, I lived with those family friends of ours in the same house, in the same room that Karen would have occupied had she not found an apartment. And they had asked me to keep an eye out for her. So up shows this pretty young woman looking for, you know, food at the Dean's barbecue reception.
And you didn't give it to her.
I did not give it to her. But we became friends, yeah. And we started to see each other in January of that year. So we've actually been together for
1990,
so 34
wow.
years.
Very, very nice.
Married 32 of that. And so we met in law school. And then to answer your question, Greg, did we work together?
Yes,
we did, actually. I was a young attorney with Steichman Elliott, which is a large, what we call Seven Sister firm here in Canada. And I was working in their corporate commercial department. And there was an opportunity for me to go overseas. We were already married. And I went overseas ostensibly for a 6-week sort of help them out. And as I left, I looked at Karen and I said, look, pack your bags because I'm not coming home. I had already lived overseas. I'd lived in the States for 4 years. I'd lived in Asia for a year. And I really longed to go back overseas and have that experience again. And so I packed my bags and headed off to Budapest, Hungary, ostensibly for 6 weeks, but with a plan. My plan was to make myself indispensable and see if I could be offered a longer stay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so after those 6 weeks, the managing partner of the Budapest office called and said, Karen, do you want a job? And I said, well, yeah, sure. But I have this articling position with Hina Blakey. And he's like, I've already handled it. So so I moved to Steichman and packed up two cats, two bicycles, and a goalie bag full of stuff and moved to Hungary for what was supposed to be another sort of 3 months or something. But we had no intention of coming back. And we ended up living in Budapest for 2 years and working together at Steichman for those 2 years. And then we moved from there to England.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
Action.
So, how's the hockey action in Hungary?
Oh. Non-existent, yeah. But it was just the fact that
you could find.
Goalie bags are huge. So we spent two absolutely fabulously years living and working in Central and Eastern Europe.
Oh, crazy work.
Headquartered out of Budapest, but we spent time in Slovenia, Slovakia,
Croatia,
Czech Republic,
Baku, Azerbaijan.
It was an amazing experience as two young attorneys who were already married, no kids.
Yeah.
We had an incredible time, and we're very thankful to Stikeman Elliott for that experience. Yeah. And then Karen started a PhD in London at the London School of Economics, and I moved to the Stikeman Elliott office in London. And after a couple of years, quite legitimately, they said, David, you've been with us for X period of time, and if you want to be a partner, you need to go back to your domestic office of origin and sort of, you know, walk the walk. And in my mind, at that time, they were asking me to return to my domestic office of origin, which was Montreal. And we had just come through another referendum on separation, and the economy was in a bit of a difficult place. Society was in a bit of a difficult place. We
and
looked at each other.
Lived in London.
My brother lived in London. My sister lived in London, and we did. And our son had been born in London. And I changed. I left. I thanked Stikeman very much, and I'm a huge fan of Stikeman Elliott. But I went and worked for Freshfields Brookhouse Deringer for a couple of years in private M&A, private equity. That gave me a taste for private equity type work. And then I went and joined a venture capital company in the heady days of the dot-com bubble. And I spent several years there, became a dot-com millionaire, and it was all in paper, and it all evaporated, all while Karen is doing her PhD. And then we came back to Canada. Yeah. And then I started work as vice president, general counsel, and corporate secretary of a publicly traded biopharmaceutical company. And I did that for almost a decade. And I was very passionate about my work doing that because my mother suffered from Alzheimer's disease. So it was fabulous. It was a great experience. And then...
And Karen, what was your PhD in?
So my PhD was in corporate governance, and I was looking at the development of corporate governance structures in the recently privatized electricity industry in Eastern Europe. So what we had done with Stikeman was the privatization of the electricity industry, among other things. And I was heavily involved with the development of the regulatory framework for the industry, and then with the tendering and the process of selling all those companies. And I watched what happened to those companies as different purchasers moved in. So there were French companies and German companies and an American company, and they all had very different corporate governance structures. And the Hungarian structure was malleable enough that it worked. And so that's what I was doing my research in. I sadly never finished my PhD because when we got back to Canada, I started a small practice working with some of my contacts from Europe. And I ended up just papering all these really amazing transactions from all over Europe. And I was essentially a legal process outsourcer. So I would do all of the paperwork for different mergers and acquisitions and, you know, large purchases of television.
A lot of DRTV.
Yeah, direct response TVs. And it was great work and I loved it. So I kind of built that up as a solo practice. And then at some point we decided, because then the PhD was kind of unnecessary. And then at some point we decided, you know, David was moving away from his general counsel position. I was ready to do something else. And we realized at that point that, you know, there had to be a different way to practice. So that's that. And that kind of brings us right back to where we started with.
Is that sort of, that was the impetus for Gimbel then?
Yeah, exactly.
It was that sense that I was moving away from my general counsel practice. Karen was moving away from her solo international corporate finance advisory practice. Because we both felt that there needed to be a different way to practice law. And we thought that we could be advocates for and instrumental in bringing in a new approach, which is really a sort of a focus on overall organizational and operational efficiency with a focus on value, giving priority to value over what otherwise in a bill by the hour frame is often filled with inefficiency and waste. And we spend our time today working with high-performing teams, helping them go even higher. Because there is, no matter how efficient we think we are, there's always a better way of doing things. And our full focus is really on that sort of incremental improvement. Mm-hmm. That little bit of, I'm done with the deal. What did I do? How did I do it? What could I do better or differently that would make it easier for me with higher value for the client? And if that's clear, let's follow that path and make little changes every day, every week, every month, and see that our practice grows in a way that does afford us the time to be both successful and have the time to enjoy that success, which is sort of illusory for many people.
Yeah.
So you guys have worked together for a long time. Like this isn't a new thing for you. Yeah. It's like you've worked together for years and in different, related, but different professions. So what's been the best thing about being in the same profession for both of you? And Karen, I'll start with you.
Yeah. So one of the things that we saw really clearly when we were working in Hungary, and in Hungary we were working really crazy hours. We had fabulous work and a great team, but we were sometimes in the office 36 hours at a time.
And our worst was actually 52. Like,
yeah, and you know, sleeping and eating. We had cots and sleeping bags, and then even later when we were back in London and I was doing my PhD, you can tell your story and say. And, you know, David was at Freshfields or at Stikeman. He was never home, even though we had a kid. He was never home till like 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
In fact, we used to eat dinner almost every day of the week, or certainly weekdays, weeknights, at 10 p.m. And I know that because Trevor McDonald came on to Channel 4 Independent News, and we'd eat dinner in front of
watching
the news.
And so one of the things that we saw when doing that is we saw what happened to a lot of other people's relationships. And I think one of the best things for us, I mean, apart from the fact that working together gave us the opportunity to live in Europe and all of that, it's much easier to accept when your partner says, I can't come home. I've got to get this work done for a client night after night after night. It's just easier if you understand that's really what's happening and you know the pressures and you understand how it works and the pressure to make partner or the pressure to deliver for clients. And I think it was harder for our friends where only one person was doing that kind of work and the other person was doing something else. But
there was disappointment and there were suspicions,
yeah,
right? It's way too easy to kind of, if you're not super comfortable in your relationship, there's always that question, wait, is she really at the office? And that was it. She knew. Karen knew exactly where I was and exactly what I was doing because we lived the experience together.
Yeah. So I think mutual understanding of what it's like to practice is one of the best things.
Empathy and support.
Yeah. I think that's key, the empathy and support.
Yeah, the empathy and support. Plus, it did really give us the opportunity to do a lot of things together.
You know, even today, I mean, because it's, as you said, Marlene, it's been a long time that we've worked together. But since founding Gimbal, 12 years ago, we've done a tremendous amount of travel, particularly pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
95-98% of our clients were in the U.S. and we were constantly traveling because there were large consulting engagements. Yeah. And we would travel down for meetings and we'd be there for 2, 3, 4 days and then we'd be back because we have a family. So we would have to come home and spend time with our family on weekends. And that was very important to us. But we got to travel all over the place. And again, funny stories. But I think it's challenging traveling on your own when you're away from your family. You don't have the support. You don't have someone to talk to. Well, I mean, back in the day, you would have spoken by phone and it would have cost you hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a telephone call long distance. Yeah. Now it's easy on FaceTime and the like. But still, I think traveling alone can be very lonely. And when we travel together, we sit in restaurants with other business people and we look around and we see how many people are sitting alone.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side is, because we're together 24 hours a day, we go to a restaurant for dinner, we sit down and we look at the menu, we order dinner, and then immediately both pull out our phones. And we spend all our time...
Talk business, but we usually do.
We spend all of our time staring at our phones, and we're confident that everybody around us, including the waiters, think we are the worst boring couple ever, that we're pathetic. And it's only when we explain to the waiter at haute voix so everybody around can kind of hear, we're married, we work together, and we've been up working together since 5 o'clock in the morning, and this is our first chance to catch up with some private time.
So
that's why we sit opposite each other at dinner when we're away. We don't actually talk, but we go out for walks in the evening. We get to explore all sorts of places.
But we don't have to do it alone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, other than embedding an air tag on each other so that you know exactly where you are, has there been any other challenges that you run into working in the same profession, especially working in the same business?
Well, there are always challenges when you work with your spouse, especially when we were doing a lot of traveling. COVID was a blessing in a way because we were, I mean, that sounds awful to say.
I know what you mean.
That way, but it was
silver lining,
which is that we really developed the remote versions of everything that we do. Because when we were traveling, we have 2 children, they're 10 years apart. And so we had a little one still at home when we were doing a lot of that traveling. And that made it hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're both in the same profession, you don't have anybody to be the backup at home when you're both really busy or when you're both really stressed. And that's another part of it. If things are, if you're working really hard on something, or if you're, you know, in the juice and you've just got a ton of stuff to do, or things are not going smoothly, when you're both in it together, you don't have any sort of downtime. And you don't have that downtime at home because you're always thinking about it and your partner's there. Like you mentioned, Greg, at dinner, are you talking business? It's really hard to turn off, right? Yeah. We make a conscious effort to do things with our kids and to spend time on things that we love and our own hobbies and things. But it's hard to turn off when you're with your partner and your business partner and thinking about work all the time.
Have there been things that you learned during the pandemic, or at least during the lockdown, that you've been able to continue as travel restrictions?
100%. Yeah. We pivoted our business massively. We used to be, again, 95% in person, mm-hmm. everything we did, whether we were teaching a course or it didn't matter. We were in person. And the pandemic taught us and everybody else that you don't have to be in person. You can still be, if you're creative, you can still be very effective. And we took all of our courses that we taught live in person and we recorded them.
Yeah.
So we have a compendium of different courses that are available online asynchronously. So you can sign up and watch it when you want. And the great thing is you can listen to us talk at double speed. We sound better like chipmunks than we do in this fashion. So we pivoted in a sense that we took all of our course content and brought it online.
What we also did is really develop the coaching part of our business. So that it allowed us to do a lot more one-on-one. We now have a group coaching program called Practice Accelerator, where we have two different cohorts, a Tuesday group and a Thursday group. We've built out. And then we also have one-to-one coaching. And again, we've built that out. And because we've been able to do what we do remotely using some good technology, so we use Zoom, we use Miro, we can do all kinds of process mapping and process improvement and streamlining using our remote tools. And that's been great because it's actually opened us up to a market that we really enjoy working in, which is the smaller firms. We've done a lot with like AmLaw 100 firms and the Seven Sisters in Canada. And that's great. But working with the smaller firms and the solos, it has been a real eye opener. They feel the pain more immediately. It's much easier to make changes because you're only having to change the minds of a couple of people. It's much mm-hmm. easier, as I like to say, to turn the canoe than it is to turn the Titanic. So it's been great. And I think if it hadn't been for the pandemic, we probably wouldn't have built out that part of our practice.
Well, you say feel the pain. They feel the pain more immediately, but they also feel the benefit more immediately. And that's partly because turning a canoe is faster than turning the Titanic. It's hugely rewarding. We build up this great relationship. We get deep into the business of our clients. And someone, more than one person, refers to us as their regular therapy session. Yeah. Because it's not just talking about the business of law. It's talking about what motivates them in life. Where are they trying to get to, right? What's the destination? What journey are they on? And when they understand where they want their life to be in, say, 3 to 5 years, we're not huge advocates in saying 10 to 15 years, because in 2024, the world changes, the economy mm-hmm. changes, circumstance change faster than ever before. So we pull back from a strategic perspective and just say, listen, Greg, Marlene, where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years' time? When you understand where you want to be personally in your relationship with your kids, your family, your community, then you can start to say, well, then what do I have to accomplish in my business to enable me to achieve the goals I have in my personal life? And we really enjoy that dialogue with our clients.
So, I mean, you guys have similar last names, so maybe people figure this out, and you do work in the same company. But do you have situations where, you know, you're meeting people for the first time, and you know, maybe they don't make the connection? You know, what kind of reaction do you get when you tell others, you know, you work in the same company?
It's really funny. A lot of people don't. And then they'll be kind of halfway through a workshop with us, or they'll be, you know, we'll be like on day two of a week long process improvement engagement. And I'll be like, wait a minute.
Light bulb goes off.
Are you guys married to each other?
To each other?
Yes. And it's funny. A lot of people call us the Gimbals. once they find that out, or they do realize that we're a couple, and then they're like, yeah, we'll bring in the Gimbals. We're going to get the Gimbals to help us out, not the Skinner.
So now it's become your company and your last name. Very good.
Exactly. So it's funny. It's entertaining. But you know, it's fine. We are happy with the decisions that we've made about building the business and about working together, and it's given us a lot of freedom to. You know, we work like crazy because, you know, when you're entrepreneurs, you work hard, but it's given us a lot of freedom too. And I wouldn't change it. It's, you know, it's not always easy to work with your spouse because, like David mentioned, you work together all the time and it's hard to turn off and it's hard to, you know, not talk about work when you're sitting there with your kids, and it's hard to kind of get time away. But on the other hand, it's given us a lot of freedom. We really are able to resolve a lot of issues because we've had 34 years of resolving issues and, you know, getting over disagreements. And so nothing really sticks. So I think it's alleviated a lot of some of the politics that I've experienced in other offices that I just don't want to deal with and don't have to deal with because I just don't have to because I'm with my partner.
We know each other incredibly well, obviously. We've been together for 34 almost 35 years. And some people find it off-putting because we'll be up walking around a room, talking, engaging, teaching, and we'll interrupt each other. It's not that we're interrupting each other, it's that we're completing each other's thoughts because we've done it so often and we know what each other thinks. Often we both open our mouths and we say the exact same thing completely unprompted.
It's kind of goofy.
It's a little, it can be off-putting. The interruptions can seem off-putting, but it's just two people who know each other better than anybody else. And we seamlessly engage. It's kind of fun. It's actually really fun.
I imagine that's probably difficult, David, because I could see when you interrupt Karen that somebody could think, oh, somebody's mansplaining the situation.
Oh my gosh,
here.
Greg. We've had that a number of times. I kid you not, we've had that a number of times. We've actually had comments in a presentation, whether it was a webinar or it was a course, sometimes we have tightly scripted what we're going to say. We've got great slides, but we've tightly scripted what we want to say because we've got a mission. We're trying to accomplish something. We've got a tight timetable. So we will script it out, including interruptions.
But not really as interruptions. No. Like, I'm interrupting him again. But we're there. They're breaks because, you know, it can get boring when you're listening to one person going blah, 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 blah. So we break the text up.
Yeah, you take a pause, have a little chat, go back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But people interpreted that breaking up of the text and switching speakers to interruptions.
And
interesting learning lesson for us.
Well, it is. And to that point, it's not even necessarily taking a pause and sort of chit-chatting. It's if we're trying to make a point and we're high speed, we'll switch speakers and I'll start a sentence. And then in the script, there's an ellipse, dot, dot, dot. And Karen knows that's her cue to jump right in and leave no gap. So it sounds like she's interrupting me. And we've been called out on it. People say, we don't like, you know, David sounds like he's interrupting Karen. What they don't realize is it's tightly scripted.
Yeah.
And it's the goal is to keep it dynamic and interactive and change it up constantly because there's nothing worse than listening to one talking head.
We know. Now everybody knows. Okay.
what we do it differently now, though, because what do we do? We get feedback and we make incremental improvements because we're process improvement people. So now we have slides where we do many more slides where we have much shorter content, and we frequently just switch speakers when we switch slides, and that avoids that problem. So,
So
there you go. Process improvement in action.
How do you guys, and I imagine this involves, again, some more sticky notes on the wall, but, you know, as things change or you've got a new situation that you may not both come to an immediate agreement on, how do you handle a situation where you need to do something and you may not be on the same page? How do you guys work that out?
Well, we're actually in the middle of a renovation right now. So let me tell you about not being on the same page.
I can see that.
So, you know, but we have a house and that house is going to get renovated and we're going to compromise. I mean, you go ahead because you were going to say something.
Well, I was going to take it in a slightly different direction. That is to say that we actually find the difference of opinion is a strength. If we're presenting to clients, whether it's in a Zoom call, coaching call, and it's people that we don't know terribly well, we're pretty quick out of the gate to say, you know what? This is what it's like working with us. You may think we're interrupting each other, and sometimes we do. Sometimes we fill in each other's words. And also, note, we will not always agree. So someone will ask a question. I'll say, I'd like to go first, and I'm going to give you my thoughts, but I'm pretty confident Karen's going to say something very different. You can put it in the brain and scramble it around and decide what you think is right. But after 34 years together, we do not agree on everything, and that's actually a strength. And people are like, okay, go with it. So it happens. We don't agree. I'll say something standing up in a room full of 40 people. I'll say A, B, C, and Karen will say, you know what? I disagree, and here's why. And that's okay, because then we can engage each other in a conversation.
With the clients.
With the clients. Mm. And they get the benefit of two different views, sometimes three or four, because we're lawyers and every lawyer has multiple positions on any one given point.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And people accept it and they move on. I don't think we've ever had like a major disagreement in a professional context.
Or anything.
Or really anything.
We don't fight.
That's good.
It is good.
It works.
So you guys have touched a little bit about like how you guys do your work-life integration. I'm wondering if you have like best practices in that regard that you guys actually do to kind of keep that integration balanced.
So yeah, we do. We have some routines that are a combination of sort of work and life. The first is that we have a morning meeting every single morning. And in that morning meeting, we do a couple of things. We talk about what's coming up for the day. And that includes what's coming up for the day in our personal life. Do we have to shop, whatever we need to do, you know, whatever. And it also includes, you know, what's on the calendar, what do we have to prep for, and all of that. But we actually do that with really, really nice cappuccinos that we make with our lovely machine. And we do it in our hot tub. So
wow.
We have our daily meeting every day in the hot tub. So it's very relaxing. It's very personal to just the two of us. And we talk a little bit about work and we talk a little bit about life. So that's one way that we do it.
It's an important ritual.
Yeah. And we also do other things together and apart. Like I do watercolor painting. And so that's kind of my thing. And I do my paintings and it makes me very zen and it gets me into the flow. And David he works for a rescue unit here in Pointe Claire, in the part of Montreal where we live. And he's also a ski patroller at Tremblant. So when we're up north skiing, he's doing his ski patrolling. And then we'll get together and we'll ski a few runs. And so we ski, and we've been skiing together since we started dating. And so that's a big part of our family life. It's a big part of what our kids do. It's a big part of what we do together. And it's totally unrelated to work. So, you know, it's just a really nice outside activity that we do.
Yeah, I have gone to Tremblant, and I have to say it's I loved it. We did a family trip there, and it was just great.
Good, I'm glad you liked it.
Yep, next time you get there, let us know.
Yeah,
I will
you
do
don't
that.
Want to see David in his red jacket.
You're welcome to see me in my red jacket, just not in an official capacity.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, no, I don't want that. So I don't want the sled. Right. No sled. No sled going down the mountain.
For some people, it's the highlight of their day.
Yeah.
It's like, thank God you're here.
Looked after and they have fun. And with little kids, I say, look, on the way down the hill, I really want you to put both arms out and go, woo-hoo! This is the best fun you're going to have. Better than skiing and better than injuring yourself. So, but yeah, Karen's right. It's a question of, I think, having some external passions. Karen's, one of her passions is painting. And mine is volunteering, working with my community as a first responder, either on the ski hill or working in a search and rescue capacity in both in our municipality, but also out in the wilderness. So that's our away time from each other.
Well, back to Gimbel and Legal Tech. What's some exciting things that you guys are working on right now?
Oh, well,
Karen's doing a lot with AI.
Yeah, I am. I'm really getting into using AI. I'm really getting into learning about how to prompt different systems, how to generate the content that you want through really refining how you prompt it and how you interact with AI. So I'm looking at it right now from a content generation perspective, and also reading as much as I can on other ways that particularly small firms can use it. I'm really excited. I'm going to be starting, well, David and I together are going to be starting a regular column. I don't know if you know Colin Lachance, Greg.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Colin? Yeah.
We've had him on a couple of times.
Colin's launching a Slaw on slaw.ca, which is a Canadian legal blogging site.
Yep,
he's
we know
launching
Slaw.
An AI page or sort of subset of Slaw, and he's asked a number of people, thought leaders in the industry, to contribute. So we're going to be contributing from the perspective of small firms and tools and how they can use AI tools to really do what we want them to do, which is be successful without having to work so hard and streamline their processes. So I'm very excited to be learning more and more about that and starting to write about that. Although I have to say our first article that we're putting out is going to be about FOMO and avoiding FOMO and all the things that small firms and solos really need to get in place first before they get sucked into the rabbit hole of all the cool things they could do with AI. So they need to get some streamlined processes in place. They need to get, you know, they need to upskill their existing staff. They need to get it, you know, do a really decent audit of what they've already got to figure out what they need. And you know, they need to get their financial house in order. There's just a few things you need to do before you really get sucked into all the amazing things that you're going to be able to do with AI. You can't, people get, they get, you know, shiny butterflies and they.
Well, I want to pick up on that because I think the syndrome is that people don't make proper use of the tools that they already have. And they will go to these, you know, ABA Tech Show or ClioCon or whatever it may be. And there are always some fabulous. I mean, there's some great stuff for sure. But they sort of go, oh, wouldn't it be neat if we could? And someone turns around and goes, you know, you can do that in Word, right? And they're like, wait, what? So it's a question of, and particularly when you're a solo or a small firm and your margins are tight.
Yeah.
Margins are tight and you've got a limited budget. And you've got limited hours in the day to figure stuff out, new software, for example, really, you're going to get a better bang for your buck if you just take a step back and go, okay, we've got this suite of tools that we already pay a lot of money for.
Yep.
What are we not using to its full potential? I mean, we know firms that spend literally millions of dollars on licenses and maintenance contracts. And they're maybe using the existing software platforms they have to 15, 20, 25%, maybe more of
it's
their
like your
capacity.
Phone.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like your
phone. So there are going to be a few things in that first article about where to start. And then after that, we're going to be looking at how to use different tools for different time and effort saving tasks, in particularly for small firms. And so I'm really excited about that. And then the other thing that I geek out about all the time is there's a particular platform that we recommend to everybody for flat fee pricing, and it's called AltFee, and we love the folks at AltFee, and we're really looking forward to working with them more and using AltFee as a way to build out flat fee engagements for clients of ours and clients of theirs. So we're very excited about the opportunities there with their software, and I'm sure there are others as well, but they happen to be the one we know the best. And, you know, for small firms, they can make so much more money if they get flat fees right. And there's just a lot of obstacles around that. So we're going to be, you know, using technology to help them price more effectively. And I think that's going to have huge value.
The soft side of all of that are the mindset shifts.
Yeah.
Right? So there's the tech hardware, there's the tech software, and then there's the soft stuff, which is just mindset shifts, change management. Helping people understand that there is a better way, that just because you've always done it this way is a really bad foundation for how you should do it going forward. And so we try to combine these mindset shifts of we could do that if, rather than we can't do that because, avoiding, however, the five worst words you can have in any process improvement engagement, which hopefully you've tightly scoped, which is, hey, wouldn't it be wonderful if, hey is not one of the words, wouldn't it be wonderful with five words? And the answer is, yeah, that would be wonderful, but it's out of scope. Let's stay focused and figure out how to use the tools we have, for example, before we go off and scope a new piece of software that we've learned about, and which certainly would do wonderful things for us, but we don't really need it right now. We've got to get our house in order, as Karen says first.
Yeah. And then really it's like there's so much you can do with technology, and every day there's something new that comes across our desk, or there's a vendor that reaches out to us that has a solution that looks amazing. And it's just figuring out the right fit for those with our clients, with other small firms. You know, it's got to be software that you're going to use. It's got to be software that's fit for the purpose you want to put it to. And it's got to take your existing process and make it better, because often people will just buy technology and they won't necessarily have thought about the underlying process, and the technology right. doesn't solve the problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we like to get their house in order, as David said. We like to get those processes in place and then find the right technology that really makes a difference for them.
So we have reached the point in the podcast where we normally ask our crystal ball question, but we're calling this the Valentine question. And so what advice would each of you give to another couple who are considering working in the same field or in the same business?
You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
This is one of those where they're not going to agree, right?
No, and you know what? That's okay. I guess that's it. Like that's the key piece of advice, is you don't have to agree. And just because you don't agree doesn't mean you can't do something really fantastic together. And you're never going to be, nobody's ever going to be perfectly aligned. And you just have to kind of go with it. I mean, if you want to start and work together in business, you just have to be really willing to go with the flow. When it's your partner, I do think there are some complications, but then there are some things that are easier. If you have good, you know, if you have really good conflict resolution strategies in your relationship, if your relationship generally has low levels of conflict and you are really good at resolving problems when they arise with your partner, you'll be fine in the business. If you're in a position where, or in a relationship where you do conflict a lot about things, where you're not so great at resolving those conflicts, where you hold grudges, which I know is the case for some people. Obviously, if they're thinking of starting a business together, maybe that's not the case. But for a lot of couples, you know, people hold grudges. And if that's the way it is, you're not going to be successful. But if you have a strong relationship where you have those conflict resolution skills, where you're okay with a certain level of disagreement and just going with it, you'll be fine.
I would say that life is short. If you love your partner and they're your closest friend, then why not find ways to spend more time together? And we have done some amazing things. We've been to some amazing places, and we've had a tremendous amount of freedom in terms of managing our schedule and being able to be present in real time with our kids, with our families, with our friends, with our community. And I think that sort of that notion of keeping up with the Joneses and making sure you've got the best of the best, and you know, you're, forget it. Life is short.
We have a family van.
Have fun and enjoy each other's company. And I would say, if you're thinking about it, think about it some more and then jump in with both feet. It is not easy. It is full of challenges. You'll never make as much money as, well, I shouldn't say never, you might.
Yeah.
But a lot of people will look at the Joneses and go, oh my gosh, if only I hadn't become an entrepreneur. The question remains the same, whether it's with your partner, your life partner, or it's out on your own. Being an entrepreneur can be very, very scary. Yep. And if you're in it with your partner, then you have less of a safety net. Today's reality is that most couples, both people work. So there's a bit of a safety net. One person can go off and follow their passion while the other one holds down the fort. In our case, we threw the fort out and we both went towards our passion, which is helping people realize their full potential. And, you know, it hasn't been easy all the time, but we're still together. Yep. We still love each other. And
we call us regularly during conference calls.
We are each other's best friend. And I think, life is short. So if you've got someone that you are really close to, and you want to spend more time with them, then working together might be a way to achieve that. It's not for everybody, for sure. Definitely. But so far, it's worked out well for us.
Well, Karen, I'm glad you didn't hold a grudge for David giving away that last hot dog, in law school. So, well, Karen and David Skinner, thank you very much for coming on the Geek and Review and sharing your love and legal tech story.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Been fun.
And I will note, all the cool people have a family minivan, right, Greg?
Yep, absolutely. Does your minivan have Wi-Fi?
No.
No, it does not. Yeah, but who needs Wi-Fi when you've got a phone?
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. That
right?
True.
I mean, having my Wi-Fi then would not help anybody.
It would just be one more Wi-Fi to pay for.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Don't get me started.
And thank you to all of our listeners for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found on LinkedIn or on X at GayBauerM and on Threads at MGayBauer66.
And I can be reached on LinkedIn and on X at Glambert and on Threads at GlambertPod. David and Karen, if someone wants to learn more about you or about Gimbal, where would they go look?
Oh, well, you can find out all about Gimbal at gimbalconsulting.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Karen Dunn Skinner. And I used to be on X, but I'm not there anymore. And but you can find me on Threads from time to time and on Instagram. And again, it's just, I think Instagram's Karen Skinner. And you'll see all my paintings there too.
Nice. Oh, nice.
You can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, David Skinner, maybe David F. Skinner. And on Instagram also, David F. Skinner. I'm not on Facebook, never have been, never will be. And I gave up X when it became X. So yep. That's how to get a hold of us. Yep. Gimbalconsulting.com and the rest is there.
Awesome.
Awesome. The Love and Legal Tech music that you hear is from Jerry David DeSica and Eve Searles. Thank you very much, Jerry and Eve.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry and Eve. And thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you very
Bye-bye.
Much.
Bye-bye.